So we're in a series, and we've been in a series, and we're probably going to be in a series for quite a while here. So we've been looking at the Beatitudes of Jesus at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, and there's just so many things I feel like I need to kind of get us in the right spot again here. So Jesus is basically starting his very first sermon to a mass group of people. And his very first words are probably some of the most important words he's ever going to speak. Not most important, but very important words. It is setting the tone for his ministry and who he is. And we showed that little video clip, the idea that Jesus is saying, man, this is like a roadmap. If you want to find me, if you want to know me, if you want to understand who I am, here it is. And he's setting down these things that will lead us to a greater understanding, a greater relationship with Jesus Christ. And he's saying, if you want to find me, if you want to know me, here's these things. And he starts off, he says, blessed are those who are what? Who are poor in spirit. Who recognize their frailty. Who recognize who they are in relationship to God. We can go into that, but we won't. Go back and look at the other sermon. And then he says, blessed are those who mourn. And we looked at the idea of mourning. What that was is mourning our sin, really recognizing the consequence of our sin that we're doing, the things that we're doing wrong against God, and the consequences not only for ourselves, but the people around us and people we might not even encounter in some way, shape, or form. Mourning our sin. And then we're in this one right now. It says, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And we talked about for the last several weeks, we've looked at what meekness is. Meekness is power. It's not weak. It's not, you know, wallflower. It's power. It's great strength. It's power that's under control. It's a humbleness, a willingness to be humble and put yourself in a lower position than what you maybe really should be in. It's that idea of looking at other people in such a way that you're not overpowering them or you're not trying to control them, but you recognize who they are and you're trying to work with them and build them up at the same time. This idea that we talked about was meekness, was, and the book used it, again, all these things, these concepts are coming out of this book by, I can never remember, Colin Smith, called Momentum. Pick up the book, take a read. It's a good read. But we look at this idea of meekness as like a horse, and I immediately got drawn to that horse idea, this great strength, this great power, this great speed, all this stuff that is completely out of control until it comes under the control of a master, of someone who trains it and guides it and directs it and takes all that power and just compresses it in such a way that it can be used in a positive way. And a lot of times we are like that horse. We have great power. God has given us great gifts. He's given us great understanding. He's given us all kinds of things. But as long as we are not under his control, as long as we're just running wild, we're never going to experience the true blessings that God has for our life. And God is desiring that we would come to him, that we would submit our lives to him, and we would start doing the things that he's calling us to in meekness, so that we can experience so much greater things than what we've got right now. A wild horse thinks he has it made, but all he knows to do is run and walk and eat and sleep, and there's so much more out there for him. So many more challenges, so many new scenery, all kinds of amazing things in the master's hand. And so for last week, 2 weeks ago, we looked at this idea of how do we cultivate that meekness. And again, here's the thing I want to make sure that I get across to you. I'm not trying to say, here's a list of things that we've got to do as Christians in order to be a good Christian or in order to whatever. I'm not trying to set up a bunch of rules and things that you have to do, all these actions that you have to do. Because here's the thing, our relationship with God is based on Jesus Christ. Okay? You got to hear that first and foremost. Your relationship, your rightness with God has nothing to do with how good you are, how good your walk is, all right? Or how good you treat other people or all this stuff. Your relationship with God, your acceptance of by God into his life, into his being, is because of Jesus Christ and what he did on the cross. And our acceptance of Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that he made and recognizing that he died for our sins and he raised again. And that's the only thing that makes us right before God. Understand that. I'm not saying you need to do this, this, and this, these 10 steps. You got to understand how to do these things in order for God to love you. No. I'm saying if you want to continue in your walk with God, if you want to develop that walk with God, if you want to cultivate your relationship with Him, there are things that God calls us to do to draw closer to Him, to have a great understanding of His character, of His design for our life, and what He wants us to do. I want that. I don't know about you, but I want to draw closer to God every single day. I want to understand His will for my life every single day. I want to become more like my Savior. He calls us to die, literally, to die to ourselves and become like Him. And some of these things are ways that we can die to ourselves and draw closer to Christ. So the last 2 weeks I was looking at that idea of, I was kind of comparing it to a horse because, like I said, I kind of like this horse illustration that's going on, and how to cultivate meekness or humbleness in our lives. And that's not something that comes natural, because in our natural being, we're kind of wild. You know what I'm saying? We want our own way, and we'll fight viciously to stay in our own way. So the 2 weeks ago, I was taking a look at a couple different ways in order to cultivate meekness in our lives. And the number one thing I talked about the first time was moderate your expectations of others, okay? Because if you're looking at others and you're expecting something that they are not able to do right now, then you have set up an expectation that is unrealistic. Remember I talked about roping the horse for the very first time, getting the around pen, and sometimes the rope that I use, the lariat that I use, is not a regular lariat, that when I rope them, I've got to be able to touch them in order to take it off. There's a breakaway. Do you guys remember this? There's a breakaway lariat that actually, if you pull it really hard, it'll actually break away from their leg. It'll snap off, and you don't have to touch them, because some horses are not ready to be touched on the first or second day. I'll say, you have to moderate. You have to look at people for where they're at and who they are, and recognize and accept them for where they're at, and recognize that. And that is a meekness that we have to get into. So many times we put expectations on people that are unrealistic, for where they are in their walk with God and their walk with Christ. Or maybe they don't even have a walk, and we're expecting them to act the way that we think they should when they don't even have Christ in their life. Do you understand that? That's a dangerous thing, because all of a sudden we're judging and we're putting expectations on people that should not be there yet. We have to allow them to go through the training. We have to allow them to come to Christ and find that love and that grace and that mercy so that God's character starts cultivating in their lives. Does that make sense? That's number one. Number two, I was talking about finding the joy in the evidence of God's grace. Philippians 4, 8 through 9. Think about these good things. And you know what? So many times we want to focus on the negative things in our life. We want to focus on the failures. But God says, think about what is good and great and all these different things. Philippians 4, 8. Let's take a look there real quick, because that's a good passage. It says this. 4:8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And what I was talking about was the idea of building on the small stuff. All right, so many times we want to focus on the negative. We need to start looking at the positive things that God is doing in our lives and start building on that. A horse learns to lead by learning how to make circles. You don't try to pull them along. You teach them how to turn, because you can actually have a little strength there. You try to turn them, and as they turn, then you start making bigger and bigger turns, and pretty soon you find out that they're leading. You build on the small things, on the things that they can understand easily. You need to think about the positive, not stop dwelling on the negative so much. And that's something that people do a lot. Have you noticed that? Especially in our world today. Man, it's easy. It's easy to look at what's going on in our world today and start focusing on the negative. You know, you watch the news and it's negative, negative, negative. And oh yeah, we have this feel-good story at the very end. Yes? It's crazy. And you see, that's Satan's playground. Because if he can keep us in a negative place, if he can keep us dwelling on the negative, man, he's got us. Because that takes away our hope. That takes away our joy. That takes away our peace. He says, think about the things that are praiseworthy, that are admirable. Thirdly, we looked at, remember how much you have been forgiven. This is cultivating meekness in us. If we remember how much we have been forgiven, how many mistakes we've made when we're dealing with other people, we can cut them a little bit more slack. Remember, I was talking about training horses, the idea that, you know what, it's applied pressure, pressure and release, and you continue to apply pressure until you get the right result. You might have 10 wrong results. If you're applying pressure, trying to get them to turn, they might try 10 different wrong things. At least 10 different wrong things until you keep applying the pressure. But when they start even making one step towards the right action that you want, you release the pressure. It's the same thing in our world today. Man, we look at people and they're going to be making mistake after mistake after mistake, and we can dwell on that, but we need to remember where we were at. How many mistakes I've made along the way. Do you realize that? So many times we want to condemn people because of what they're doing. Well, guess what? I was probably doing the same thing, probably even worse. And I need to remember how much God has forgiven me. So that helps me deal with other people that are struggling with sins in their life and not condemn them, but come alongside them and recognize that God's not done with them yet. He may still be applying pressure, guys. And he's just waiting for them to take the right turn, to take the next step. And then we need to rejoice with them and encourage them and allow God to keep working in their lives. And the last one I looked at was the idea of taking time before we form judgment. And I was saying that's one of the things that I have a hard time dealing with, especially when I'm training horses. I'm always trying to go quick. We need to slow down. Slow down in our relationships. Remember the whole lick and chew? They finally get it after a while. Sometimes it takes a little while, and then they lick and chew. I understand. Let's take our time. Don't expect great results in just a few minutes. Now, I'm going to go out of order here from the book. This is the new stuff right here. So the next thing to cultivate meekness that Colin Smith is talking about, the next thing I'm going to be looking at is walking in daily fellowship with Jesus Christ. If we want to cultivate that meekness, here's the thing. We talked about that Moses was the greatest Old Testament example of meekness. Remember that? But Jesus really is the ultimate example. Jesus is the ultimate personification of what meekness was. Great strength, under control, with great understanding and great compassion. So in Matthew chapter 11, Jesus says this. Matthew chapter 11. You have your Bibles, turn with me there real quick. Matthew chapter 11, verse 29. I'll go back up to verse 27. It says, all things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Verse 28, come to me. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble. Listen to that. I'm gentle and humble in heart. He's saying, I'm meek. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So, when Jesus is saying, come to me, take my yoke upon you. So the yoke was a thing that you tied two oxen together with. You know what I'm talking? The guys that, the cows that went out and plowed the fields, and the yoke is this wooden thing that would bind these two animals together in order so they could work together. So if you're doing that, you don't ever want to take two green, unbroke ox and hook them together because they have no idea what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? If you put two oxen that have never been yoked together, you are going to have one heck of a rodeo going on because they're going to want to go this direction and that direction. And if they take off in one direction, you're never going to get them stopped. So when you yoke oxen together, normally if you're trying to train a new one, we're the new one, you try to yoke the untrained oxen with a extremely well-trained oxen, okay? So the one that is trained will help train the new one. Now, if you take that over to a horse, I'm just making a new example here. Let's say Jesus says, take my saddle upon me, all right? and allow me to get into the saddle. So, kind of an interesting thing. So when I first started training horses, and I know maybe some of you are getting tired of this illustration already, but when I first started breaking horses, what I thought I was doing, the very first horse I ever got on that was completely unbroke was with my father-in-law, Kathy's dad, okay? And he was just like, he was one of those old-time school guys, you know, he tied the horse up and he did all the stuff, and then you finally get the saddle on, the horse is jumping around, you get it cinched up and he's jumping around, you just climb in the saddle and you go. So I was working on this horse we ended up calling Bud, and first time I got the saddle on, and he is nervous and bouncing, and you may have heard me tell this story before. I had him tied to the post, and he was just all nervous and stuff, and I'm nervous as all get out because I've never been on a horse that had never been ridden before. I'm scared and nervous, but I'm determined. You know, I'm young and dumb and stupid and all that stuff, and I'm ready to get in the saddle, and Steve is there. He's helping me, my father-in-law. He's probably watching. If you are, I still remember this. Anyway, So he's like, you know what, it's probably dangerous to have it hooked to that post because, you know, it might get a little jumpy. And he says, well, why don't I just hold the horse for you and you can climb on. And I was like, okay, sounds like a good idea. So he's holding the horse and I'm scared and the horse is scared. And I put my foot in the stirrup and I swing up into the saddle and I'm just like, ready, you know what I'm saying? I'm tense, and the horse can feel I'm tense. He's nervous, I'm nervous, he's scared, and not Steve. He's just hanging on the rope, and the horse does nothing. I mean, it's just like frozen. It's just like stand there quaking. You remember freeze, flee, or fight? He's frozen, but he's just shaking, and I'm shaking, we're shaking together, and I'm thinking, oh, this is not good. And all of a sudden, Steve goes, well, this is no fun. He lets go of the rope and smacks the horse on the butt. True story. Smacks him. That horse jumps. I mean, he was frozen. He just jumps straight up, comes down, and falls. So there's a fence right here and a big pile of old junk. There's all junk. Anyway, so there's a big pile of junk wood right next to the fence. The horse jumps up, comes down, sidesteps, stumbles, falls onto this big pile of wood, all right, that's laying there. I'm smart enough or quick enough that I actually raise my right leg up so he doesn't land on my leg when he falls down, all right? But I'm not smart enough to take that leg and swing it over the backside of the horse to get off of him as he's laying down. I'm so stupid and so green, I tried to pick my leg up and go like this. Guess what I did? I kicked the horse in the head. Guess what he did? He got up, and away we went. Don't ever do that. You know, I was doing the same thing for many, many horses. I mean, doing the same thing, getting on that horse. He's scared. I'm scared. Hanging on for dear life, bucking, kicking, getting dumped off. Bill, you're back there. You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? That's how we've always done it, right? Here's the thing. I found something out. Barb Gerberts has been trying to help me figure out how to train horses a little bit safer. And I was working with her and two other people that were working with horses in the same arena. And she, for 3 weeks solid, we worked on the ground, and we worked on the ground, and we worked on the ground, and we put the saddle on. I thought, oh, we're putting the saddle on. I must be getting ready to ride today. Nope. We put the saddle on for probably 4, 5, 6 days, and we'd work with the horse with the saddle on and do all this other stuff. And one day, I'll never forget this. So Barb has all these things lined up. All these little obstacles. She has a big piece of tile they have to walk over, has a pallet with wood on top of it that they have to step up on the wood, and she has these little pieces of wood they have to kind of step through like they're stepping over logs, and she has a tarp laid out that the horse is supposed to walk over, kind of like simulating water and all this sort of stuff. And I've been doing that with the horse on the ground, leading it, making it go through all these obstacles, doing all this stuff, taking a flag, standing on one side, doing all these crazy things. And I'm thinking, man, when am I going to get on this horse? And I finally gave up. I thought, maybe I'm just going to lead this horse for the rest of my life, I guess. I don't know. And literally one day, Barb says, hey, he's ready for you to get on. I was like, what? She says, he just lets you know it's okay to get on. I was like, are you serious? She goes, yeah. So she's not looking at me. She's looking at the horse. I wish I could have found the video. I looked really hard. That day, I got on the horse. He never bucked. He went over the tile, stepped over the tile. He stepped up onto the pallet. He went across the little obstacles. He rode across the tarp. I rode him for probably 45 minutes, turning right, turning left, stopping, doing all the things that we've been doing on the ground. And it made me realize at some point in time, the horse will choose. I still haven't figured out exactly what it looks like. The horse will choose to have you put the yoke on. And Jesus is waiting for the same thing. He's not going to force the saddle on you. He's not going to force the yoke on you. But when you finally come to the conclusion that he really is who he says he is, the Savior of the world, a God who's in control, a God who has a better plan than anything that you could ever imagine, if you'll come to him and take his yoke and allow it to be a part of you, he'll guide you. He really will. And he will teach you about this meekness that he wants you to know and how to deal with all the obstacles that you're going to come in contact with throughout the rest of your life. But you have to be ready to take it. You have to trust him and accept him. Because he says, listen to what he says, take my yoke. He doesn't say, I'm going to throw my yoke on you and we're going to go for one heck of a ride. He says, take my yoke. So, once you get that saddle on and the master's on, there's something really interesting that the next step in developing this meekness is this idea that Colin brings out. It says, make friends with meek people. And he refers to Proverbs chapter 22. Proverbs chapter 22 says this. 22 verse 24 through 25 says this. Diane gave me a smile. I guess we're all right. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, it says, bad company, what? Corrupts good character. So I've learned with horses. Okay, here we go again. I've learned with horses that when you start riding them, like get them out of the arena and into the world, it is so much wiser to ride with other horses that are already trained, that have been through a ton of things. Because just being in the company of a horse that is calm when things start to go a little bit crazy, or calm when they meet new obstacles, the other horse that's not trained, the one that you're on, will relax a little bit because they see the other horse being relaxed. Man, I wish I would have learned that a long time ago. Because you can ask Kathy, I used to go out by myself all the time when we started training the horses. I would take off, I'd saddle up, and I'd just go, and I'd be gone for hours. And this horse that I ride right now that I do all my roping on, Doc, he was a freak. And I mean an absolute freak. Because I could ride the exact same trail from one day to the next, and if a branch, literally a branch, fell out of the tree the night before and it wasn't there the day before, he would recognize it and freak out. Every little thing. You talk about scary, be on a horse like that and a rabbit jumps out. Whoa! You've got to be in control at all times. You can't. Here's the thing. A lot of people say, well, we're going to go riding horses. And they think about this idea of just kind of going along for the ride. You don't ride. You don't sit on a horse. You don't ride it. You drive it. If you're not in control, if you're not telling that horse which way to go and how to do it and being relaxed and also being prepared for anything that could happen, you're in for a world of hurt. But if you're riding along with other horses that have already seen so many different things, crossed water, crossed over bridges, gone through trails, seen hunting tents, oh my word. Wow. Hunting tents are like bears in Illinois to horses. I had no idea. They like scare them to death. Here's the thing. Man, if you want to grow in your meekness, if you want to grow in your lack of frustration, in your lack of anger, man, you got to associate with people who are in that position. Don't associate with people that fly off the handle and get angry about every little thing. Find friends, hang out with people that have the characteristics that you're growing towards. You know what I'm saying? It's that whole model of, you know what, if you're standing, if someone's standing up on a chair and you're down there, and you think you're gonna help them. If you're standing on a chair and they're down there, and you're gonna try to help them up. It's so much easier for them to pull you off than you to help them up. You understand? And that's the same thing in our life. I was about to hit my head. It's the same thing in our life. Man, we got to associate with people that can help us as well as we can help other people at the same time. You got to think about those things because we take on the characteristics of the people we hang out with. If you're hanging out with someone that's always depressed, always mad, have you ever noticed this? Have you ever hung out with a person that's really upset with their spouse? Yes? No? Have you ever seen that? If you start hanging out with, man, my husband, my wife, don't smile like that, Mark. All right, you know what I'm saying? You hang out with someone and you're hanging out and they're like, my wife is this, she's never home, or you know, her cooking is blah, or her attitude, or blah, blah, blah. And you hang out with that person, all of a sudden you start, yeah, well, my wife, my husband, yeah. Have you ever noticed that? Ladies, guys, don't think you don't talk like the ladies do. Same thing. I only hang out with people that just love their wives. Seriously, think about who you're hanging out with. If you want to develop meekness, here's the one that really gets me. Take pleasure in the joys and successes of others. In Romans 12:15, it says, mourn with those who mourn, rejoice with those who rejoice. Did you hear that? Meekness is being able to see the condition of other people and be able to place yourself in their position. Now, I've used this example a little, Buzz, you're just killing me this morning. I always use this example when I'm doing premarital counseling and stuff like that. Is, you know, so many people say, well, they just make me so mad and I can't control my anger. I can't control this. I just fly off the handle. This is a reaction. I can't control it. I'm like, no, that's a bunch of baloney. Have you heard this before? I just can't control my emotions. That is a total lie from hell. And I use this example over and over and over again. Let's say that we're sitting in a room and we're laughing, and we're joking, and we're cracking up, and we're having a great time. And man, we're just on cloud nine, and we're having so much fun. And someone walks through the door, and they walk through like this. And they look at you. And what do you do? Keep going, oh yeah, that's all right. Oh, that's it. What do you do? Do you keep laughing and joking and having fun when someone walks in the room when they're looking like that? No, you immediately take your emotions of joy and laughter and stuff, and you are able to flip the switch like that, aren't you? You're able to do that. You're able to flip that switch of emotion, and you're literally able to come down to that place where that person is to help them, to comfort them, to strengthen them, to listen to them. Here's the thing. It goes the opposite way, and I always forgot about this. It's so much easier to mourn with those who mourn. But there's another side to this whole thing. He says, rejoice with those who rejoice. Think about this just for a second. It's real easy when someone's down. Say, oh, Diane, I know you're sick, but I just left this other person, and they're so much sicker than you. You know what I'm saying? You're sick. I get it. She's not sick. You're not sick, right? Okay, so she's good. I'm just making this up right now. I know you're really sick, but, you know, I just left Kyle, and he's really, really sick. You should be happy that you're just a little sick. It's like, great, thanks. And that's kind of what we do most of the time. That's kind of how we live our lives. But what he's talking about here in this idea of meekness, he says, if we become meek and humble in heart, we're not going to have the idea of looking for someone who's worse off than us. We're going to literally rejoice with those who are rejoicing. Man, I'm broke. We're going to have ketchup soup again tonight. But you know what? I am so happy. I am so happy that Betty is doing well right now. It's awesome. It makes me feel good to know that Betty is doing great. That's awesome. You know what? My kid, oh my goodness, the decision that they are making right now is just driving me crazy. I can see what's going to happen. But Dave, it is so cool to see how your kids are just succeeding and growing and doing these amazing things. Do you see the difference? You see, if we start to learn in a meekness and a humbleness in our relationships with people and start learning how to rejoice with those who are rejoicing, see the good that's happening in other people's lives and be encouraged by that rather than always looking to the negative, all of a sudden it develops a meekness, a humbleness, a desire to see good in people around us. And it develops a relationship in such a way that it not only builds them up, it builds us up. It's so easy to look at the negative. It's so easy to get bogged down, and it literally holds us down. It doesn't develop the strength and the power that God has placed within us to be used for the good of not only ourselves, but the people around us. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing when you take a horse out, and I'm going back there. It's an amazing thing when you take a horse out and you start exposing them to all these different obstacles and all these different things that they're afraid of, literally being afraid of a branch on the ground or a tent in the woods or the water hole or the mud or a hill or a bridge or all these different things that they're so afraid of, and you keep taking them out and you keep what? Beating them till they do what you want them to do? No. Encouraging them. Giving them the time to figure out that it's not going to eat them. That it's not going to kill them. Giving them the time and the patience to figure things out. And after a while, each obstacle becomes a little bit easier. And a little bit easier. I'll give you another quick story. I remember Doc, the one I'm riding right now that I go roping on. So I've been trying to figure out how to train him to rope things. Not, I rope the thing, he drags it, okay? So I've been dragging logs. I've been dallying off, roping logs, dallying off, and having him pull the logs so he knows what it's like to have something dragged behind him, because that freaks him out too, having anything following him, especially when it's like hooked to a snake. Man, you hook a snake to something, you drag it with a horse, they're going to freak out. They do it every time when you start off. But after a while, they're like, oh yeah, that snake's just dragging that thing. And so we're dragging along and dragging along. He's doing good. I remember the first time I was in Mikey Thacker's pasture down by Princeton, and there was a cow, it was a calf, a little heifer, about 700-800 pounds. No, she wasn't even that heavy, probably 400 or 500 pounds. A little heifer, we call her Wheezy, because she had something going on in her lungs, and she's like this. And we were trying to get her up to the barn, and she would not lead up to the barn. We could not drive her. She wouldn't go with the rest of the cows. She couldn't keep up because they were going too fast, and she was wheezing, so she couldn't keep up. And we spent like 2.5-3 hours trying to get this little cow, calf, up to the barn. She wouldn't go. Finally, I had my rope on. I was like, well, no better time than now. Thought, see what happens. Roped it. That little calf started jumping and spinning and bah, bah, and jerking on the rope and all this sort of stuff. And because I drug so many logs and found so many obstacles for my horse, he dragged it like he did it 1,000 times. 1,000 times. And it seemed like there was a switch. There was a corner that was turned that day with that horse. And the trust that we had built took us into crazy, amazing situations. To this day, I take that horse into places I probably shouldn't, but he trusts me. So far, we've come through. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Discern God's hand in the work of your enemies. To develop meekness, we have to discern God's hand in the work of our enemies. In John 18:11, Jesus said to his disciples as he was about to be led away by the Roman guards, he tells Peter, put down your sword, put it away. And he says, shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? He hangs on the cross. And what does he say? You brood of vipers! No. He says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You know, there's a lot of evil people out there that have done a lot of wrong things, not only to us personally, maybe to our country, maybe to our town, maybe there's a lot of evil out there, guys, yes? I know, I get this. I do understand this. The 30 days of prayer that we got going on right now for the Muslim people, you're thinking, why would I pray for the people who have terrorized, who have killed, who have slain, who do horrible things in the name of Allah, people who have maybe friends that I know, why would I want to pray for them? The horrible things. Why would I want to pray for this guy who did that to me, or that woman who did this to me, or these people? Why would I want to pray for them or even consider anything for them? If you look at the example of Jesus, he could have said, that Judas, why would he betray me for 30 pieces of silver? That Pilate, he had no right to pass judgment on me. My disciples, where were they? Why did they scatter? Why did not one of the 12 that walked with me for the past 3 years stand by my side or even shout out, hey, don't do that? Man, he could look at 1,000 different things. He could blame 1,000 different people. He could look at all these different things, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. He looked to God. And he looks at the providence of God. And he recognizes that a God who is in control can work all things for good. And he will for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Guys, I don't know what circumstances you're finding yourself in at work with some jerk, in your home with some maniac, on the road with some fool. I don't know what tragic event is happening in your life right now that you look at it and you're like, that dirty dog. Do you remember who brought that dirty dog into your life? Do you remember who's guiding you? Who's sovereign over all things? You can be mad with God. He's okay with that. You know why he's okay with that? Because at least you're coming to him. Literally. Yell at him. Scream at him. Shake your fist. But go to him. He's big enough to handle it. And if you will submit, humble yourself, come to him in meekness, he'll show you. He's got this. And even if it doesn't work out for you, that doesn't mean he's not working it for good. I think if I took a poll right now with this group of people and asked how many of you came to Christ, how many of you have come to Christ to the realization of your need for God because of some tragic event that happened in your life? Something that was absolutely horrible. Or a circumstance that you just couldn't handle. Think about this. God used that horrible, no good situation to bring you into life. To wake you up. To make you reevaluate. To find his grace and his love and his mercy. And the last step right here is this idea that if you're not getting it, if you really just don't understand it, if this meekness seems impossible, ask God. Ask God to help you. Literally. Say, Lord, I can't do this. If everything I've said for the last 2 weeks makes no sense, say, Lord, I don't understand this. It makes no sense to me. It goes against everything I've been taught for the last 50 years. Give me wisdom. Woo. Give me wisdom. Help me understand. Literally, ask him. You see, James says this. James says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may mature and not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault. And it will be given to you. But when you ask, you need to believe and not doubt. Because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. See, God wants you to understand. He wants you to grow in your relationship with him. In James chapter 3, he talks about two different types of wisdom. I want you to hear this. Verse 13, James 3:13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in humility or meekness that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and you have selfish ambition, is that anything would have to do with meekness? If you have selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Don't deny it. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly and unspiritual and of the devil. Verse 16, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Well, Eldon, why didn't you start with that? I'm ending with it because this is what I want you to remember. If you start by asking God, admitting to Him who you are, being poor in spirit, if you start with asking God and recognizing the sin that has prevailed in your life and you mourn that sin, don't try to cover it up. He begins that process of building meekness and humbleness and submissiveness to the hand of the Master. And He will take you and expose you and reveal to you the plans that He has. And that's where life really, that's where life really starts. Not in my anger and my frustration and my enviness. It's recognizing who He is. He's got the reins. He's yoked on my back. And where He leads me, I will follow. Amen.